Hi, I'm Tommy, and I'm the host of Tea and Waffles, a guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. In this six-part series, I'm sitting down with amazing guests and opening the lid on issues faced by young people, hopefully providing some guidance to propel you through this messy COVID period, starting your 2021 the right way. They say three is a magic number. Well, it's me, my guests, and you. So I guess we're all in for a special episode. I'm not sure if you're still doing New Year's resolutions on the account of the dreaded C word and cooking utensils ending with demic. But I decided to go on a limb anyway and set a target of having more healthy relationships with things in my life. One of which was my Santander student account. If I was to liken my relationship with money to a relationship status, it's an entanglement, and best believe I'm the Fresh Prince. This couldn't have been further from the truth, as when I was younger, little Tommy could tell you how down to the penny he'd allocated a 30p allowance for the selection of the finest 1 to 5p sweets from Spa, a 29p KA can from Bossman in the corner shop next door, and not to mention the largest and most important portion of the budget, 3 wings and chips from the famous gourmet South London eatery, Morley's. Honestly, if younger Tommy could see my present bank account statements, I'm not sure if he'd jump for joy seeing the amount of money that comes in or cry at the rate that it swiftly exits. Fast forward to university, and I'm a little more familiar with money, but not so smart in managing. This was my first experience of dealing with debt, as I found myself frequently national expressing it from Leicester to London for mum's care package of jollof and chicken when the overdraft inevitably kicked in. I also got some life lessons in understanding the difference between worth and value, as I constantly found myself making the impossible choice between ASOS and night orders and feeding myself for the week. I currently have a section in my podcast where I talk about trainers, so clearly I only scored about 50% on that test, but we move. I think just like any 20-something-year-old relationship, there's always going to be some crazy ups and downs. But if you're committed to making it work, it's sure to improve. And if that's not your case, I'm sure this episode can help you out. This is a conversation between me and the personal finance guru that is Laura from The Thrifty Londoner, as we discuss everything personal finance from saving to investing and even developing a healthy relationship with money. I hope this episode can be the counselling session you and your current account never knew that you needed, and you secure the big bag this 2021.
I think the first emotion is stress. just headache, just absolute headache. I wish I was like better at keeping track of my finances and everything, but I feel like I can get away with it at this age. But yeah, it's just stress. It's just headache.
So good morning, good evening, salutations people. You're tuning in for another episode of the Tea and Waffles podcast, a guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. Today, we're going to be talking about personal finance, and I'm here with a financial guru who's currently not in London, despite her name, but she goes by the name of Laura. She's from The Thrifty Londoner, but I'm going to pass it over to her and she can give a kind of overview of who she is, what she does, and how she got into finance.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tommy, for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be chatting with you today. Like you said, I run Thrifty Londoner, which is a personal finance website and Instagram page of the same name. I love to help other people to kind of manage their money a bit better, provide just accessible, jargon-free money information and everything that goes with it. So it's like pensions, investing, saving, budgeting, like all that good stuff. I just run that in the hope that people can feel a little bit more confident when it comes to money and just a little bit more in the know, because yeah, it shouldn't be the rich men in suits who know all of the inside information.
Definitely, that's amazing. I definitely think that last part, which you sort of spoke about, you know, the rich guys in suits who sort of strut around in Barbican and Old Street, who sort of deal with all the sort of huge finance, and you sort of find yourself having a look in, whether it's Yahoo Finance or it might be The Independent, or you might see in certain publications, you see a lot of jargon out there, which is very, very confusing. As a young person, sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming.
Definitely.
Would you say that is sort of one of your strong motivations for starting up the page?
Yeah, absolutely. So I moved to London when I was 23, I think, which was a few years ago now. I moved to London on quite a low salary, and it was a bit of a shock, to be honest. Like, suddenly I found myself like with really high bills to pay and you know, quite a low income, without really knowing how best to manage my money and how to kind of enjoy London particularly without loads of spare cash. So yeah, I started Thrifty Londoner just because I wanted to show people that you know, even if you are on a low income, you can still love the city and you can still enjoy everything that London has to offer. But it kind of then developed into something more, where I wanted to learn more about personal finance and then give that information to other people and provide a place to go where people could find out little bits about their pension and you know, how to make their money work better for them, really.
Oh, okay, that's really awesome. So I know that you said that you moved to London when you were 23. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like a shock to the system with your salary sort of being low. I think as a young person, that's very, very relatable, because a lot of us sort of come out, either it being through like an apprenticeship, an entry-level job or university, and you sort of find yourself on a lower salary and you're sort of thrown out there to sort of fend for yourself and figure it out, which can be very, very difficult. So I kind of wanted to ask for you, before moving to London, what sort of financial advice, or where did you learn about your own personal finance before?
To be honest, I didn't have loads of information on it. I guess you kind of learn from your parents or your guardians and the adults in your life about how you should manage your money, really, and those habits get passed down to you, and you know, you'll have certain beliefs about money before you even start working, just because of your upbringing and experiences usually. So I probably, when I was like just out of uni, I learned about very little about finance, just from, I don't know, like reading Cosmo or something. Like, there was really like very little information out there. I kind of just found myself with like not much money left in the bank at the end of the month, and kind of thought, okay, there must be like a better way. And so I started following some personal finance kind of influencers, if you like, on Instagram, and then it kind of led me to kind of find out more about budgeting and just little kind of thrifty tips on how to make your money go further. So that all really helped. But yeah, it's sadly the reality that people have to kind of really dig to find out this information, rather than, you know, learning it at school or anything like that. So unfortunately, I guess that's the reality for a lot of people. It's a bit of trial and error, and then, you know, if you do manage to stumble across some information, then it's a bonus. But you know, a lot of my friends, you know, are still in a lot of debt from their uni days and the years that follow, just because, you know, living is expensive and entry-level jobs aren't usually that well paid. And if you don't stumble across some information, often you can find yourself knowing very little about how to manage money.
100%. I think definitely one of the points that you sort of made about like there being a lot of information and sometimes it's hard to kind of filter out what information is right for you. And then also information not being readily available sometimes. Like you kind of have to do a little bit of digging and searching, which is something which I've personally found within my own journey. But I think for me, it's sort of been figuring out what is right for me. So my question to you is that I know that there's a lot of people, you know, who sort of talk about savings. So you mentioned influencers, and sort of bloggers, etc. But there's so many sort of techniques like leaving your card at home, for example.
Yeah.
Or setting certain amounts that you want to save like throughout the month. Like maybe you want to save £10 and then next week will be £20 and then next week after. So you sort of save incrementally. So there's all these different sort of techniques. So I kind of want to know, like, how did you sort of personalize your saving technique or your saving method? And what sort of advice would you give to somebody sort of going through their own monetary personal finance journey to figure out what works well for them?
Well, I think if you are particularly looking to save money, it's a really great idea to kind of get started with a budget. So I know, like, when you hear the word budget, you kind of think it sounds like something that's going to be restrictive and it's, you know, not going to be a lot of fun to follow. But you kind of, if you do budgeting right, in my view, you can leave yourself enough room to spend money on fun stuff and like socializing and all that other stuff, whilst still leaving room for saving. So I think one of the things you can do is spend more on the things that you like doing and spend more on your savings, if you like. So put more money aside every month if that's what you want to do, and then spend less on the things that you aren't as bothered about. So if you love meeting friends and going out for dinner, not that that's something we can do right now, but ordinarily, if that's something that
you can.
Yeah, I did go out for dinner with my friend last night, actually, I must say. It was, yeah.
Must be nice.
It was nice. We won't dwell on that. But so if you do want to spend more money on going out for meals and stuff, you can do that and then maybe spend less on making food at home. So you might do like batch cooking, or you might go to low-cost supermarkets, or you might do meal planning, which is where you try and reduce your food waste by planning out your meals like a week in advance. So ideally the meals would all match up and you end up spending less on your food bill. So that's like a kind of example where you can like spend more on the things that you love doing and less on the things that you're not so fussed about. So I think that's definitely something you can apply to all different types of things when you're budgeting. And even if you're looking to save even more money, you can kind of cut back on more stuff, or maybe if you love going for dinner, maybe you only do it once a week instead of like several times a week. You know, there's all different ways that you can kind of start cutting back. So yeah, when I got started that, like, I definitely started with a budget and kind of tried to make it as sustainable as possible by, you know, making sure I did have this money for fun and for travel at the time. And the thing is, like, if your budget's too strict, it's almost like going on a crash diet or something like that. Like, and you'll just like binge afterwards. So like in the context of money, you're more likely to just kind of go on a spending spree after a period of like intense restriction. So yeah, in order to stick to it long term, it kind of needs to be quite balanced. And
in response to personal finances and money, feel quite excited. I guess not being a student and being constantly in debt is nice, to be in someone's payroll. Also like discovering a lot more about money in terms of like passive income, etc. It's exciting to sort of find ways to increase your income without working for it. but also just learning more. But yeah, so excited. That's the emotion I feel.
Okay, so my last question on the topic of saving. We've kind of spoken about the fact that we're in a pandemic. It's a very, very uncertain time. And sort of one of my biggest queries to myself when I was sort of setting some financial goals at the start of the year was saving. And how much should I be saving? And like, is it more important now purely because we don't know what tomorrow's really going to bring?
Because
you sort of hear about all the doom and gloom, and it's a bit like anything could happen.
Yeah.
So my question to you is that, do you think that now is a more important time than ever to be saving or having a nest egg?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think, yeah, like you say, if there's anything that we've learned from 2020, it's that it's so important to have some kind of backup plan, like a plan B of some kind, if we can. And, you know, I think a lot of people would look back on 2020 and think they, you know, it would have been great if they had some money saved or like other skills to fall back on, you know, if they were made redundant or lost some of their income. So, yeah, I think it's definitely more important than ever to save, because, you know, life is so unpredictable and we don't know what the economic climate's going to be in a year or 2 years. So I think it is really important to save, just because we don't know what could happen. And there's a saving strategy which is called building an emergency fund. Okay. And as the name suggests, it's kind of like a pot of money that you can easily access in the event of an emergency, in inverted commas, or like an unexpected expense.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like glass break here.
Yeah. the emergency fund can give you more security and give you more options in the event of an emergency. So if you did lose your job or you lost some of your income, you would have that pot of money to fall back on. And it just means that you can have a little bit more time to maybe find the right job for you. You know, you're not like forced into going after any job just because you desperately need to pay your bills. It just kind of gives you some options and can help you it can protect you against getting into any financial hardship.
And the first question, actually, in terms of finances and my current financial situation, I am piss poor. I'm a student who obviously was struck down with the lockdown and COVID and everything. But when I think about my finances in general, I actually think about it with hope. Like, obviously, we can only go up from here. But at the same time, it's kind of like I didn't grow up with a lot of money. So I don't have an attachment to money. Money comes, money goes. I use it. It's a means. It's a tool for me to achieve what I need to do. It's that money is not the goal. Money just helps me attain the goal, you know? And I find that having that kind of mindset where I detach myself from money on its own kind of helps me not really look at life as doom and gloom and as like obtaining a piece of paper to kind of dictate whether or not I'm successful or not, you know?
I was reading this book. I started reading recently. I haven't read since I was in like secondary school, I think, like an actual book. I decided to kind of take a personal finance a little bit seriously this year. I started having a look at personal finance gurus like Patricia Bryce.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's a huge, huge one for me. And then also, I'm not sure if you've seen that series, it's Glamour, where it was how people of different occupations spend their money. Mm. So like how I spend my money in like a month. So like, oh, 58K salary or something like that. And like how they break it down. So they break it down into like their rent, because they're American, so their version of an ISA is a 401k.
Oh, yeah.
Then they'll talk about their Roth IRA and then they'll start talking about like all the subscriptions that they spend on and like crazy prices. Like over here, it's just like Netflix, Spotify, and there's a few other bits and bobs. But yeah, so essentially, I was kind of fascinated by that, and that sort of led me into doing my own research into personal finance. A book which I bought was by Laura Waitley, I believe. It was called Money, A User's Guide.
Yes, I haven't read that, but I know the book that you mean.
Amazing, amazing, amazing book. It breaks a lot of things down, a lot of complex things into like very, very simple ways. And one of the topics that I kind of came across was about investing and getting your money to work for you, which was a weird concept to me, because I was like, I work for my money. What do you mean you get my money to work for me? But the more that she sort of delved into a lot of the ideas and topics, it sort of made sense. So like, I likened it to Freddo's. So, you know, back in the day, Freddo's what? 5p. And then if you wanted the caramel Freddo, 5p more, it's 10p. But now, if you go into like a corner shop or a Tesco or a Sainsbury's, Freddo's like what, 25, 30?
Yeah, 35p? They're ridiculous.
Something insane. So that's like what, I'm an engineer, so this is awful. It's about a 700% increase. but yeah, so and that for me was sort of the easiest way for me to understand inflation.
Yeah.
And sort of the idea of your money losing its worth, even though it's still the same money.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. So I sort of try to have a look at ways in which I could invest my money, but it's very difficult because there's so many different things out there, sort of like what we were talking about before. So I sort of wanted to get an idea from you, was like, what sort of ways do you reckon young people could get their money to work for them? Maybe not just like actively managing, but also passively. Like, what sort of methods can you do, even if you don't want to do sort of like, you know, trading? Like, because that's like an actively managed way that you can invest your money. Obviously, because some people might be at uni, some people might be at school, some people might have a full-time job, and that's not really applicable. So like, what sort of methods have you implemented yourself, but also some that you also know about that might be useful to others?
Yeah, so it took me like a year to start investing, because I just found that there was like so much confusing information out there. There's so much jargon, and yeah, I just really was kind of apprehensive about how to open an account and how much money I needed to put in. And I, at the time, I didn't really see any like young people who were investing and kind of talking about it in a way that I understood. So I personally invest in a stocks and shares ISA. So I started that about 18 months ago now. So I haven't been investing that long, but that's the best way for me, because I can just automate that from my bank account. Like, I think it's £150 that goes into that account every month. And
I just wanted to ask, could you define what an ISA is and what a stocks and shares ISA is? Just because some people listening might not know what that is.
Sorry. So an ISA stands for an individual savings account. And a stocks and shares ISA means that you can put money into that and it gets invested in the stock market, essentially. So you can kind of adjust, without going into like too much detail on it, you can adjust your kind of attitude to risk when you invest in a stocks and shares ISA. So if you want to play things really safe, you might invest in 80% bonds, which are like thought to be much safer than like volatile stocks, or if you wanted to kind of increase your risk, you might do it the other way around and invest like only 20% in bonds. And every year you have a maximum of £20,000 that you can put into an ISA. So there's also loads of different types of ISAs. You can just get a cash ISA, stocks and shares ISA, a lifetime ISA, and they all do different things. So a lifetime ISA, you get a top up from the government on the money that you put in. And people use that to save for their first home or retirement as well. And then cash ISA is for saving. And then stocks and shares ISA is for investing. That's like my preferred method because I can just put some money, you know, set up a direct debit, put some money in there, and I just forget about it because, you know, someone else is doing all of the stuff in the background for me. Yeah.
Hard work for you.
And the best thing with that is that ideally you don't need to check your investments that often. Like I check into my account like once every 6 months, if that. I think I've logged on like twice to see how it's doing. So to be quite honest, like I don't know the ins and outs of what goes on with that. Like for me, the most important thing was is that I took action because the younger you start investing, the better, because you can kind of earn interest upon interest on the money that you put in. So for me, I just wanted to get started. So I just opened that, set up a direct debit, and then largely just forget about it. But, you know, I'm hoping that I can keep that up until I get to retirement age, and then, you know, I'll be able to live off that money, hopefully. But there's other ways that you can invest too. You can get just a general investment account, which is kind of another easy way, because with the provider that I'm with for my stocks and shares ISA, the minimum you have to put in every month is £100. And not everyone has £100 to invest every month, especially like you say, if you're a student or something like that. But there's other robo-invest platforms. Yeah, so
like Nugget and
yeah, and there's other ones as well, like Wealthify as well, which is great. So I use Wealthify as well, and I just have a general investing account with them, and you can just invest from a pound. So like it's much more of a straightforward way to invest, and you know, if you are a student, you can just put a few odds and ends in there, like here and there. Like you don't have to kind of commit to huge amounts of money every single month. So yeah, there's so much more you can say about investing, but those are the two that I use myself, I guess. That's probably the best way to make your money work harder for you in a traditional sense. I guess the other thing is you can invest in anything. Like some less common things are like property, or some people collect like Rolexes and stuff. So people invest in all sorts.
I think that's quite common, you know, because like even now a lot of people are saying to invest in things like I'm not sure if you know, but the Hermes Birkin.
Yes, bags. I've heard about those. Yeah.
So a lot of people like buy those bags, and obviously because, you know, they have a lot of I don't want to say hype, but like they retain a lot of value.
Yeah.
Same for Rolexes as well. If you buy a certain type of Rolex, you know, maybe quite rare. Same thing goes for trainers, really.
Yeah.
Like for me, I'm a huge fan of trainers, and I've done something absolutely criminal in this episode, but I'm gonna come back to it at the end. but yeah, this is perfect point. So like I'm a huge trainer head, sneaker head. I buy trainers all the time. I sell trainers too. And prime example, over Christmas I got myself a pair of Sean Cliver Dunks. I bought for £95 and they're worth about £600 now.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
Like I think there was a pair of Air Dior's that released last summer. They retailed for about 1.8 grand and now they're selling for about 8 grand, 9 grand.
Wow.
Ish. And there's some trainers which sort of I can go into.
This is so interesting though. I've never spoken to anyone.
This is my expertise. but my main point essentially is that there are some items, like, you can call them assets, I guess essentially the assets, like houses normally retain a lot of value, because that's why people say invest in bricks and mortar. And then also, you know, like items, certain items, you know, unlike cars, for example, they depreciate in value. But then you have a look at things like what you said, Rolexes, certain trainers, certain fashion products, they appreciate in value. So I guess it's about picking out what is good for you and what you understand, so you can sort of make the most from
your money. Exactly. It's kind of like, even like in the short term, just like flipping items, like you say with the trainers, is a way of making more money from your money, I guess.
Now that we've gotten over all the happy stuff, we're going to go into a little bit of gloomy, uncharted waters, if that's fine with you.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I'm going to sort of relate to my own personal sort of journey. So I went to university in Leicester. And for me, that was really my first encounter with anything like debt, with anything like overdraft. I didn't have overdraft when I was in second school. All I had was like a Halifax current account. But then, you know, when you go off to uni, you get yourself a student account, and you get a certain amount of overdraft, and then you do things like you start ordering stuff. You know, maybe it might be a laptop, or it might be, I don't know, an ASOS haul.
Yeah, been there.
Like, exactly. And then you might start encountering things like, you know, buy now, pay later, like Klarna, for example. And really, one of the things which I really like noticed with a lot of people and their attitudes to their personal finance and money in general, was that there was a real nonchalantness about it, because it kind of feels like it's not real money. Especially when it comes to like credit or buy now, pay later, overdraft, because it's not your money. It's just sort of a number in an account. But I noticed that when I was sort of heading towards the end of my university years, or when people sort of graduated, there was a real sense of panic, that there was a realness setting in that this money that you've borrowed is now money which needs to be paid back. And I think it's something that isn't really sort of talked about. So I sort of wanted to get a feel from you. What sort of advice would you give to people in dealing with their debt? Because I know snowballing is a real thing. And how can you sort of manage that? And then also, how can you initially prevent yourself from slipping into debt?
I think debt is sometimes very necessary, like whether that's student debt or consumer debt. I'll start by saying, like, I don't think anyone should ever be ashamed about getting into debt, because there's still so much stigma around it. And I think part of that is because we've kind of been told that talking about money is a bit of a taboo. You know, we don't learn about it in school, like I said earlier. I think it's really important that we change that and kind of start talking about money and having more conversations about it, like we're doing right now. So I think it can happen to anyone. And I don't know, like, I think people haven't necessarily been reckless when they get into debt, but I don't know, I think the best thing that you can do is talk to someone if you're really struggling, because, you know, it can get to a point where you've got a loan and you've got like a couple of credit cards, and every time you get to the end of the month, you're having to put more stuff on credit cards because you've got to pay so much back. And it, like you say, it can just snowball, and it can be suffocating as well. Like, it can be quite a scary place to be. And I don't know, it's important to reach out to people that you trust to kind of get some help, or just kind of to be able to talk about your situation, because it can really weigh on you if if you're kind of keeping that secret and you're kind of trying to keep up with your friends still, you know, and if they don't know about your situation, they might be like, oh, like, let's go on holiday or let's do this or that. And you might feel like you're obliged to keep up with them and other stuff. And that's why we shouldn't be scared of saying to our friends, like, actually, I can't afford it. Can we do this instead? Or, you know, things like that. And the reality is that probably your friends are going to be in a pretty similar money situation to you, and they're going to be happy to have those kinds of conversations.
So,
I think there's loads of strategies for paying off debt. Some people like to... Well, I personally think the best way is to pay off the debt that has the highest interest, because you don't want to be like keeping high interest debt for longer than you need to. That's the first port of call, and then you can slowly tackle any other debts like one by one. But other people like to kind of tackle the smallest amount first, so that you kind of get that kind of quick win, and then you can build up momentum, build up your confidence, and then tackle the next biggest and then the next biggest. So there's kind of no right way or wrong way, but like we were saying earlier, it's to do with what is best suited to you and like what motivates you the most. So I would say, to prevent going into debt in the first place, it's important to build a healthier relationship around money. So there can be loads of reasons why we spend money in the ways that we do, and our kind of mindset around money sometimes needs to be the first thing that we change in order to have like a healthier relationship with it. So without even realizing it, we might be thinking things like, I'm bad with money, or like, I work really hard, so like, I deserve to treat myself. It's kind of those kinds of thoughts that we might not even realize we're having, but can kind of get us into these situations where at the end of the month, you've got to put stuff on credit, you know, in order to get through to the end of the month. So I think a lot of people find themselves in that kind of cycle. And I don't know, like, changing those beliefs isn't something that's going to happen overnight either. You kind of have to address them and consciously overcome them. So like with the whole treat yourself mentality, instead of thinking like, I work hard and deserve a treat, you can say, I work really hard, so I deserve to be debt free or something like that. So that helps, like, yeah, just reframing those thoughts. It comes back to budgeting again, I think, because if you budget in a way that suits how you spend your money or how you want to spend your money, then you can still build treats into that, but you can also kind of have the control over your money that you need in order to save or you know, cover your bills and stuff like that.
So when thinking about my my money and my personal finances, so prior to me starting a job, I had no care for money, and I didn't check for my credit score, I didn't check for how I'm handling my money, monthly budgets and stuff like that. I was always going in and out of overdraft, and when the money comes in, like, I didn't have any care towards it. But however, since working, I've become more cautious of money, because ultimately, I think you become more cautious when you have an ultimate goal that you want to hit, or maybe get a house or get a flat or get that car that you want, and you gotta like fix your personal finances to actually achieve those certain goals. So within maybe like, for my personal goals, within the next maybe decade, I would want to own a flat or a house, and for me to do that is I have to keep my personal finances and money in check. And it was a daunting thing to comprehend at first, because you're like, cool, money's coming in, I got to put this in there and put this in there, and then you're like, cool, I'm left with 200 for the month for food. And I was like, shh. And you start to think like, what things to buy, where to shop, and then it's like a chain effect that happens in your brain. So yeah, so when thinking about my money and like finances, to answer the question, was at first it was daunting, but when you have that end goal and when you make that end goal, I reckon things can drop into place like a chain effect. Like, you know what to do to get to that goal, and one thing is being like militant with your thinking and saying you can't get that extra piece of slice, like, or pizza for takeaway, or you gotta stay militant, and that, I think that's the most hardest thing to do, staying consistent.
But before we close out, I want to ask you something which I criminally should have done at the beginning, but I forgot to because, well, we swung straight into the conversation. But I have an icebreaker question which I give to all the guests who come up on the podcast. I'm not sure if I can call it an icebreaker anymore. this is more like lukewarm water at this point. but yeah, so I'm a huge fan of trainers. I'm a sneakerhead. I'm not sure if you could tell from when I was telling you about comparing stocks to trainers. I'm pretty sure it's quite evident. But the question which I ask when guests come on the podcast is, what is on your feet today? What are you rocking? What's the latest wear? What is your favorite trainer? But I do understand everyone is at home, COVID, lockdown. Not you in your case, but if you haven't got anything on your feet, or you're not brave enough to say, then you could tell me the trainer that, if you could have any on your feet right now, or shoe or boot, what would it be?
So yeah, I am barefooted right now, but my favorite trainer, oh, I don't know. I actually got some really awesome trainers from Net-a-Porter, like, in their sale a few months back now. But they're like, I think they're a remake of like an 80s design of like a Reebok trainer, but they have like scalloped edges, so they're like, yeah, they're just a bit different. I've never seen them before, so I love those. But I also love Nike Internationalist trainers as well. They're probably my go-to trainers. But nothing like super high-end or anything like that, but just comfortable.
That is a quite niche trainer. But I feel like the nicheness is like what people are going for now. Like, people don't really want things that everyone else has. So like, you know, like a Nike Tailwind or something like that. Like that, that's a very, very obscure trainer. But if you know, you know.
It's so true. I love like a gum sole. That's like my preferred option.
Oh, I love a gum
option.
Sole. I love a gum sole. My go-to is a black suede Air Force with a gum sole. Absolutely amazing. Goes with a lot of outfits.
Yeah, that's the main thing. You need like something that goes with a lot of stuff in your wardrobe, definitely. Yeah, adaptable.
That was a great answer. But yeah, so Laura, thank you so much for coming on. I absolutely enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
Hopefully other people have managed to take away something from this conversation and enjoyed it just as much as we have. But yeah, everybody, thank you for tuning in for another episode of Tea and Waffles. Hopefully you tune in for another one, and we are out.
If you've made it here, then you've just finished episode 3 of Tea and Waffles, a guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. Featuring Laura, a personal finance guru from the Thrifty Londoner. Make sure, if you've enjoyed this episode, to check us out on all social media platforms at Tea and Waffles Pod and join in the conversation. Finally, make sure to stay tuned for more topics, more amazing guests, more importantly, more waffle.